Most of us have probably had to set out on a journey at some stage in our lives, perhaps a family holiday. You might recall making all the preparations, packing your bags, packing the car. Normally Dad's job to pack the car, and then his fault if something gets left behind. You've ticked off everything on the list, yet still, as you know everything's done, you stand at the door, you've locked it, you're about to pull it shut, but you still go through that mental checklist in your mind, don't you? Is the iron turned off? Have we got everything? Have we left anything behind? As we're about to set out, great hope, great anticipation, there's always that little sense of, ooh, is everything okay? Just before we go. I can still remember the morning of our wedding day. The fellas getting ready. It's not that much to do really for the guys, but making sure we had the rings, that's probably the most important thing. Having a kick of the footy, as you do. But it was only getting in the car and heading off to the church that it hit me probably with the most clarity up to that point of what was actually about to happen. It's only when we get to the point where there's no turning back, I can promise you on that occasion there was no doubt or apprehension. It was only as we set off and face our destination that the journey ahead and what's ahead for us looms large in our sights, isn't it? Whether it's a journey or a major event, we've all been in a place of uncharted waters where we don't know what's ahead. A time where we've had to do something we haven't done before or go to a place where we haven't been before, unaware of what lies before us. And just like any journey, there's excitement and anticipation in those times, but chances are we've also felt a little tentative, anxious even, not sure about how to press forward. Not sure how we're going to manage what lies ahead for us. How encouraging is it in those times and places when someone who has gone before us comes beside us, gives us some advice. They've been there before. They tell us of the challenges that might lie ahead. They give us some advice on how to face those challenges. Or better still, they actually take our hand and they go with us, guiding us along the way. They know the path well, their experience, their wisdom. We can trust them. We can rest in their knowledge and in their care. As we look at Psalm 121 this morning, you might like to open it up if you haven't got it open from our readings already. We're going to find that the psalmist, this pilgrim traveller, is being reminded and encouraged in the faithful care and protection of his travelling companion and ours, the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. It's not all that long ago our family went for a walk through the Jupiter Creek goldfields, not far from where we are at Echunga. We walked around, looked down some old mines, most of them filled up now, but some of them are quite deep, fenced off, and sort of have to throw a stone or a stick in and try to listen to it drop to see how deep they are. Some of them quite deep. But there's one point there, if you've ever been there. If not, it's a good day's walk. It's a good day out with the kids. But there's a tunnel in the hill. It's a mine shaft that's still left open and you can walk through it and a ladder at the other end. It's about 60 metres long. There's a sign there that's saying something like hard hats and torches required or recommended. We asked the girls if they wanted to go for a walk through this tunnel. One was very keen. The other one, well, let's just say you could see the colour drop from her face just with the thought of going into that dark cavern, not knowing what lurked inside. So I took the keen one. We had no hard hats and no torch. A cheap mobile phone was about all we had for a little bit of light. I had to hunch over the whole way, but as we shuffled through with my daughter in front of me, hand upon her shoulder, and our poor excuse for a light shining so we could see where our feet went, there was keenness and excitement. This is all a bit new and exciting, but there's also that sense of fear. There was no way my daughter would want me to let go of her shoulder. She needed to know I was with her. Nor, being her loving and caring father, was there any way I was going to let go. That'll be a good thing to remember as we go through our psalm this morning. As a loving and caring father, there is no way I would want to let go of her in that place. Anyway, we made it through the end and carefully climbed the ladder, popped out the top to find Bron and our other daughter waiting for us. And then guess what happens? Dad, can you take me too? Still a little bit hesitant, a little bit anxious, but knowing that someone had gone before her, knowing that it was now safe, she was actually quite keen to go. So we did it again, this time all four of us, confident because of the company of those who had gone before. Whether it's an actual journey or a tunnel like that, or some challenge that life sets before us, we've all been in uncharted waters, haven't we? It might just be getting up each day, facing another week, the hustle and bustle of life, work, school, raising a family, raising your parents, keeping the home. That was sort of a joke. Thank you, Joe. Some of us parents feel like we get raised by our kids sometimes. But for some of us, even those seemingly routine things are a bit like that tunnel, aren't they? We don't know what's ahead. It's even a little bit scary. And we need someone to go before us, or someone even better to go with us to help us through. None of us know what each day holds. Every day places us in those uncharted waters. Every day we need the help and encouragement from one another, and most of all, we need the faithful provision and care of our Father. Sure, we can make our plans, we can pack our bags and set on our journeys. But what is it the proverb reminds us? In his heart a man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps. The Lord determines our steps. Not one day goes by where he hasn't been determining our every step. Not one day has gone by where he hasn't been watching over us, where his Son hasn't interceded for us and spoken a word of promise to us, and where his Spirit hasn't been given to us, the Comforter. That's the context of our days, each and every one of them, isn't it? In the care and provision of God. Even as we face the daily battles, not knowing what lies ahead, we are kept in the steadfast love and care of a faithful Father. The early church in the New Testament lived not in a theology, but in the very real and constant, sure reality of the risen Lord Christ. Is that a reality for us today? Sometimes I think the tangible stuff seems more real than the risen Saviour, who now reigns over all power and authority. That was reality for the early church. And the words of this psalmist, the pilgrim of Psalm 121, can be a great encouragement to us all, because that's the same context for us. He had his own context when he was writing. It's not just an individual sort of sharing out of his own individual experience. He lived out of a history and a context, a reality of life, family, the whole history of God and his people, of Israel, God's faithfulness to them, his covenant promises. And it's in that reality and from that context that he writes this psalm. You may know Psalm 121 is actually the second of a collection of 15 psalms called the Songs of Ascent. They were sung at particular times throughout the year, particularly during the great pilgrimage feasts. Three times a year, many pilgrims would gather around from surrounding areas and go to Jerusalem and meet together. The Feast of Unleavened Bread, or the Passover, in the spring, the Feast of Weeks at Pentecost in early summer, and then the Feast of Tabernacles in autumn. And on the way to Jerusalem, they'd sing, much like you might. Colin Buchanan gets a fair playing in the car as we go on our journeys, whatever else it is. But as they made their way to Jerusalem and they saw the hills ahead, they would sing these psalms. These psalms would be on their lips. Some say they were even sung one at a time as the people ascended the 15 steps leading up to the temple. One step, sing a psalm. Another step, another psalm. The Lord determines our steps. Now, whatever their location or their use, whilst these psalms were most likely written well before they were collated as a group of the Song of Ascents, they were collated in this way for use during festival times, and in particular for the journeys to Jerusalem. Psalm 121 is very much the psalm of a pilgrim about to make his way on a journey. And as he sets out to begin his travels, he lifts his eyes to the hills ahead, to the path that he must tread. He can't go around these hills, he's got to go over them and through them. These hills are the high places. Hector spoke a couple of times during his time with us about the mountain of God, the dwelling place of God. That could be what the psalmist is alluding to here, but it seems more likely that in this psalm, for this particular traveller, The hills actually give some sense of caution or threat. There's some concern regarding them. I lift my eyes to the hills. Golly gosh, where's my help going to come from? As I look to where I need to travel. If I'm going to travel up and through those hills, I need someone to help me. The mountains around Jerusalem were known to be a place of danger. There's steep climbs, there's sheer drops. The city of Jerusalem itself is surrounded on three sides by sheer deep ravines, up to 100 metres deep. It's a pretty helpful military defence. There's only one side which is approachable, and that's the north side where the wall is. And that wall's 30 metres high. Then there's the hills and the mountains further afield from Jerusalem where the wild animals and the robbers roamed. The places of the pagan gods were scattered throughout those mountains. And Jerusalem wasn't the tallest mountain in all that area either. The Mount of Olives, just a bit further out, stands 100 metres taller. So they're the things that the pilgrim is looking towards as he sets out on his travel. And he lifts his eyes to those hills, and his heart filled with hope, but also with some fear, looking forward to the journey and the destination ahead, but aware of the potential dangers and calamities that may confront him along the way. That's much how we make our own way through life, isn't it? Hope, together with a bit of fear, especially in those new situations. Threat versus opportunity. Trouble versus providence. Things to look forward to, but challenges to face along the way. The psalmist asks the question as he looks up to those hills, to the challenges that he's about to face. Where is my help going to come? Then he answers himself. Maybe a little unsure. Maybe still a little tentative. My help's going to come from the Lord. Perhaps he's got some knowledge of his history, of his people. Some knowledge of Yahweh, but not the experience or faith to go with that knowledge. Or perhaps, and I think this is more likely where the psalmist is at, perhaps he's actually got wonderful knowledge of his Lord. He had a wonderful experience of Yahweh's care. But those hills, they look big. And he's reminding himself that his Lord is bigger still than what's ahead. He's the maker of heaven and earth. This is not some tentative, hopeful answer. This is a bold and confident confession. Even in the face of what may lie ahead, my help will come from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. This is more than just a bit of positive self-talk. It's not just good psychological cognitive therapy. For this pilgrim and for us, this is real and this is the truth of which we live. It's not based on just his own experience. It's based on the experience of those who have gone before him, on all of Israel. It's based upon the promises of God and the fact that he has proven himself faithful to his covenant promises throughout all the ages. My help comes from the Lord, the creator of all the universe, the maker of heaven and earth. Even the mountains that he's about to face are his. Even the mountains we face are his. And as Paul says, they're ours. All things are yours. And you are Christ's, and Christ is God's. The mountains may look big, they may be treacherous, but our help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. You'll notice from verse 3 onwards, there's a little bit of a shift in the voice in the psalm. It's no longer my help, my eyes, it's now your foot, your life. Could be the voice of an older, perhaps wiser, more experienced pilgrim. Perhaps for the sake of the psalm, it's in the form of a call and response. One person may start off with the first couple of verses. The congregation may answer. Perhaps the pilgrim still continuing with his self-talk. Again, not just that nice pep talk, but with the solid truths about the Lord and his promises. Whatever the case, the remainder of the psalm gives great hope, and it explains how the Lord is going to help him. The rest of the psalm can pretty much be summed up in the central line to the psalm itself, the beginning of verse 5. The Lord watches over you. The Lord watches over you. Other versions, it'll be the Lord is your keeper. Maybe the Lord will protect you. The one who guards us, who protects us, it's the same word used when Adam, what he was meant to do with the Garden of Eden, to look after it, to take care of it, to keep it, to guard it. And that which we fail to do in the garden, God now does for us, not just over the garden, but even over those of us outside that garden. He keeps us. How does he watch over us? How does he keep us? Well, going on in verse 3 and 4, he keeps us always. He watches over our every step. He will never slumber nor sleep. He watches over all Israel, but also the individual. The one who is far off and powerful, the maker of heaven and earth, is the one who watches over Israel. Not only does he not let their foot slip in the wilderness, for 40 years their sandals don't even wear out. The Lord keeps his people. And that same Lord watches over this one pilgrim on his journey, watches over his every step. Can you see how the psalmist's faith and logic are working, or better still, how God's good care works out? From the vast expanse of creation, the maker of heaven and earth, he watches over Israel, and he watches over his chosen people, his own precious child, son or daughter, even right down to their footsteps. The one who is higher than the hills, the maker of heaven and earth, is also close by and intimate. He's with us. If you've got an ESV, you'll notice it uses the word keep each time. The NIV sort of changes from keep, I think it uses that once, and then watches over us a couple of times. Other versions use the word protect us. But you'll notice the phrase is not he watches you, but he watches over you. It's quite a different meaning. A number of years ago, sometime last century, Bette Midler sang a lovely sentimental song called From a Distance. You might remember it. And just towards the end, as it starts to tail off, there's this little line in the back that says, God is watching us from a distance. And that's exactly what this psalmist is not saying. God is not watching us from a distance. It's nothing like that at all. Nor is he watching you, just waiting for us to slip up. I think many of us have had that idea of God before, haven't we? He's the big policeman in the sky, or the strict teacher looking over our shoulder, ready to pounce. But the scriptures don't speak of the Lord in that way. Sin and Satan, yes, but not the Lord. The Lord watches over you. He is your keeper, your guard and protection. My help comes from the Lord. He's the maker of heaven and earth. But that same Lord is the shade at your right hand. He's that close, as close as your shadow. Doesn't always feel like that, though, does it? We go through times where God seems not to hear us, where he seems to have left us to our own devices. He may as well be asleep, because it doesn't seem he's keeping us at all. There'll be many of us here, I think, that could resonate with that. We do slip up, we stub our toes and we scuff our knees, or worse. Things happen in life that make us think that God is gone. He's not in control. He's not watching over anything. We only have to actually read the Psalms, some of the other Psalms, to realise that that sort of feeling, that situation is not a rare one. Psalm 69, save me, O God, for the waters have come up to my neck. Psalm 130, out of the depths I cry to you, O Lord. Psalm 6 and 13 have similar sort of thing. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? And we probably know Psalm 22 well. My God, says David, why have you forsaken me? Have we ever had words like that on our lips? Ever felt like the world's crashing in on us and we've got nowhere to turn, nowhere to run or hide, and God seems to be nowhere near, No help at all. Don't you care? Can't you see I can't do this on my own? Answer me, O Lord my God, cries the psalmist. I need to hear from you. There are times when he doesn't feel like he's that close at all, isn't it? Yet we can actually join. The encouragement is we can join with those psalmists as they finish those psalms. Those psalms never finish on the same note that they began. As they've been crying out to God, they've been reminded once again of his faithfulness, of his abundant care and provision. Their situation hasn't changed, but their vision has. They've looked beyond their own circumstance, beyond the hills, and can now see the Maker of heaven and earth is their keeper. As they cry out of the depths of despair, as we cry out of our depths of despair, we will find that the God who lives in the high and lofty place also lives with those who are contrite and lowly in spirit, to revive the spirit of the lowly, to revive the heart of the contrite. And then there's Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken me? Christ had those words on his lips, didn't he? He cried that cry. He experienced that abandonment on the cross so that we might never know the fullness of that abandonment. So that we might never need be abandoned by God. With sin judged and dealt with once for all, we can now know God's watchful care and protection both now and forevermore. Nothing can separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus. Nothing can separate us. Did you ever try to separate yourself from your shadow when you were a little kid? Try to play with the light and do tricks and jump up and jump on things and try to get the shadow further away? Try to work out the sun and the different angles and see how it all worked. But no matter how hard you try, you could never be separated from your shadow, could you? Not unless you turn the lights out. But we are those who have been called out of darkness into his marvellous light. So that's not an option. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The same word shade and shadow. He's that close. At your right hand, guarding your strong arm. Not much help for lefties like me. But to be honest, I'd be happy to have him on either side. He can choose where he'd like to. But God does not watch over us because we have been good and upright or because we've got a strong arm. As we heard in our first reading, it's not because we're more in number, because we're great or righteous or holy, but because God loves us. It's not when we get it right that then God will come and help us in our journey. God comes and helps those who are lowly and contrite, the least in number, the weakest. Why? Because he loves us, because of his grace towards us, not because of our merit. We've been looking through our series in Exodus, and God watched over his people in their time in the wilderness. His chosen, beloved people, yet, as we've been reading, we find they're a miserable, whinging bunch of no-hopers, really. That might seem pretty harsh to say of God's people. But they did nothing but complain to Moses. They had no hope for the future. They kept looking back and saying we were better off in Egypt. They didn't trust in their Lord who had already saved them, brought them out of Egypt. But he still carried them on eagle's wings. He faithfully provided for them and cared for them right down to the soles of their shoes. Why? Because he loved them. In his grace and mercy, he loved them till the end. And it's because of that history, because of that revelation and that grace of God that the psalmist can write and encourage us with his words, with such confidence and assurance in the Lord. Because this is exactly how he kept Israel. It's how he keeps his chosen people. It's how he keeps you and me. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. If you're out journeying in the mountains, sunstroke and sunburn would be quite a danger, wouldn't they? probably not much of an issue for someone like Hector in the highlands of Scotland. And at night time, the wild beasts roam, the robbers are out, and the moon was even said to have certain effects on people. There's superstitious belief that it actually caused some quite serious illness. We get the word lunar from the moon, we also get the word lunacy. You've only got to ask a nurse or a doctor who does shift work, or a policeman or woman, and find out that when there's a full moon, things do go a little crazy. Statistics say it. Yet despite all that, the Lord watches over you day and night. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. In fact, he will keep you from all harm. He'll keep you from all evil, watching over your whole life. You're coming in and you're going out from this time forth and forevermore. There is no harm, there is no calamity or disaster that is outside of the control and care of God. But it has to be said that mishaps happen along the way, don't they? Quite likely bigger things than just little mishaps will happen. We've all got our own stories to tell. But friends, none of these are beyond God's shelter and care. He watches over all our lives. As Noel has, I think, just wonderfully encouraged us in these past months, everything we receive comes from the hand of God. Now, we might question that. There might be some theological or maybe just plain fleshly tension with that statement, with that reality, because it doesn't always seem that way. But just consider the alternatives for a moment. Where would we be? What hope would we have if things are not under the care of God? If he has no control over certain aspects of our life, if there are times when he does go to sleep and just let nature or evil take its course, what hope, what assurance would we have? But the psalm ensures us that this is not the case. The Lord will keep you from all harm, from all evil. David wrote, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil." Why? Because the Lord is our shepherd. He's our keeper. He guides us. His rod and his staff comfort us, even in the valley of the shadow of death. So there may be some tension with that statement. Everything we receive comes from the hand of God. But instead of that tension, consider this. Knowing what we do know of God, what we read of him in scriptures, of what we've experienced in the past and what God's people have known of his nature and his character, it is impossible for God not to be our keeper. God cannot not watch over us. It's his very nature that he does. Just as for a shepherd, he can do nothing but shepherd his flock. And our shepherd is far greater than the mountains we face. Our shepherd's not just like a shepherd either. We can't look at a modern day shepherd. Don't have many in Australia, but go to other places and they're very much still as they were in Jesus' time. But God is not like a shepherd, because sometimes shepherds get selfish. Shepherds start to feed themselves and forget their flock. They might fall asleep in the warmth of the sun. No, I did yesterday afternoon. Or during the long cold nights. That happened to Israel too. Their shepherds got selfish. They failed to keep watch faithfully. But just to finish off this morning, hear what God said to Israel and to the shepherds who were not faithful. In Ezekiel 34, God says, "I myself will search for my sheep, and I will look after them. As a shepherd looks after his scattered flock when he is with them, so now I will look after my sheep. I will rescue them from all the places where they were scattered on a day of clouds and darkness. I will bring them out from the nations and gather them from the countries, and I will bring them into their own land. I will pasture them on the mountains of Israel, in the ravines and in all the settlements in the land. I will tend them in good pasture, and the mountain heights of Israel will be their grazing land.
those mountains of Israel end up being places of nourishment and provision, no longer trouble and fear. How? Because the Lord God is keeping them. There they will lie down in good grazing land. There they will feed in rich pasture on the mountains of Israel. I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the Sovereign Lord. I will search for the lost and bring back the strays. I will bind up the injured and strengthen the weak, but the sleek and the strong I will destroy. I will shepherd the flock with justice. Friends, we have a good and faithful shepherd, do we not? We have the Maker of heaven and earth watching over us. He is our keeper. And so as we head out today, to the rest of the week, to the rest of our lives, as we face the mountains before us, we might be weary from the demands of those mountains. The list of jobs and the things to do may seem like an endless drudgery. We might feel ourselves slipping under the weight of our burdens. And if that's the case, then hear the words of the pilgrim. Lift your eyes, not to the hills, not to the mountains of life, but beyond them, to the Lord. Yet as you do, know that the Maker of heaven and earth is not far off. He is so near, as close as your shadow. The Lord is watching over us. He watches over our coming in and our going out. And he will keep us, both now and forevermore. Amen.